In reviewing the lectionary, which is a set of scriptures that Christendom has, or sections of Christendom have suggested that we follow from Sunday to Sunday, I noticed a certain repeating theme. And so we're going to be focusing a little bit on that. The anchoring verse is the one you heard, "Be not conformed to this world." So we're going to start today, as we explore what that means for us today, with the idea of turning. It's so easy to just go with the flow, isn't it? And we are asked as people of faith to actually resist that flow and turn to a new way. Our three stories today: Moses turns toward a call and to holy ground. Jesus turns toward the Jerusalem and the cross. And Paul encourages the early believers in Rome to turn to a new way of being, to a counter-culture commitment. Moses is tending sheep out in the wilderness. He's been doing it for a long, long time now, and he's called to marshal a budding, fledgling nation from slavery to freedom. That's quite a shift. Jesus, healing the sick, evicting demons, preaching the really, really good news, growing ever more popular among the people, follows the call to lay down his life for the sake of humankind. And those early Christians, meeting together in meal and celebration and sharing fellowship and seeking and seeing to their common good, start to recognize just how radical their faith and their faithfulness should be. These are the stories of transformation. Be not conformed, but be transformed. Trans, changing, changing formation. Being one thing and then confronting divine call, calling them to be something more, something else. But in each case, there is an element of resistance. Moses responds to this call. We didn't read this section of the text, but Moses responds to this call from God, saying, "Who am I to do such a thing? Who am I? I'm a shepherd, after all. And who's calling me to this? Will those people you're sending me to heed me? Will they cooperate?" And of course, God says, "You tell them the I Am is sending you, and they should pay attention." But he still argues. There's a bigger, longer argument even after that. He's not so excited about this call. Jesus is presented with a real temptation when Peter refutes him. Jesus faces the power of this temptation to not go, don't go, by naming it as coming from Satan. This isn't just an alarmed protest on the part of Peter. It's a compelling invitation from that which is in opposition to divine things and Jesus' mission. And I don't think Jesus would have refuted Peter to the degree he did if he didn't really feel the pull of that temptation. We whitewash that. The congregation in Rome, in the very heart of empire, are inclined to mimic the values and practices of the state without realizing it. In fact, Paul names how it is their faith is in conflict with their behavior. He doesn't say it this way. He's much, actually, this is one of the tactful times when Paul comes across to the people. But this is what he's telling them. They curse. They're callous, prone to pride and arrogance, and given to revenge. They don't see this, of course, for in the culture in which they live, this is normal behavior. It's normal behavior to give honor to more honor to one strata of society or an individual than another based on certain criteria. And he tells them, don't do that. But they don't understand it because it's so normal for them. It's so part of their environment. They don't see that it's in conflict to the faith God's called them to, or to the way Jesus lived, taught, and died. But Paul is calling them to break from those norms, to integrate something radically different, something that flies actually in the face of those conventions. Hudson, the associate professor of New Testament at Abilene Christian University, offers a translation of how it is these new Christians are to be. It's a little different than the one we read today. Genuine love, authentic love, God-imbued love, we might say, is this: abhorring the evil, clinging to the good, being affectionate to one another in brotherly and sisterly love, outdoing one another in honor, not lagging in diligence, but being a fire in the spirit, serving the Lord, bracket, not empire, rejoicing in hope, persevering in affliction, being devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, and pursuing hospitality to the strangers. That's a list I'd invite us all to really mull over. How abhor, really abhor evil? Does it get us in the gut? Does it make us want to throw up? How passionately do we cling to good in the face of that evil? Answer that evil with good, not with escalated rhetoric. In fact, something I read years and years ago by a philosopher talking about how do you absorb evil? How do you answer evil? And it's by absorbing it, by taking it in and then answering it with good. There's that effort underway in our city with people quietly trying to present a presence that embraces good in the face of things that are evil and strident. To be affectionate to one another, even when we disagree and don't like one another and are out of sorts with each other. To outdo one another in honor. The list goes on. The way to get there is to keep that joyful hope, to claim the promise God gives us, that all will be well, to move through affliction without letting it defeat us, to pray, and to focus on the needs of others and to invite those who are strange to us to the table. We might look at our empire, and this is not an exhaustive list by any means, but we have conventions and practices that we just sort of go along with thinking they are good and represent a good life, and I think the question is, do they? Our society tells us that we are entitled to keep all the money we earn for ourselves. Our society tells us that idle time is not okay, that industry and work is the measure of success. Forget vacations and Saturdays off, and Sundays as well. It's okay to blame the poor for their poverty. We're told that we're not preparing our children really well for the future unless we're filling their days with structured activities or giving them over to experts to learn how to play the likes of baseball. And I think it's a convention in our day, as we're recognizing more and more, that it's okay to treat people who don't have white skin differently, that we do not honor them in the same way we honor someone with a white skin. That's been so invisible to us. We need to recognize as people of faith, people who call God our God, people who say Jesus is my Savior, that we do live in a complicated, complex web of good and evil, and it is difficult sometimes to discern the difference and to see our way through the veil that's over our eyes from the way our society conducts itself. We don't see the damaging things or the ways we do damage to each other. And we aren't always real ready or willing to want to say it's at work in me too. How am I complicit here? I saw a little circle on somebody's computer. This week I was reading it upside down, and so I wasn't quite sure I was getting it. And then when it really dawned on me what I was reading, I thought, oh dear, I don't like it. White silence equals violence. It's been a long time since we've recognized that, right? But we are called to speak out, to live out, and by doing so, to testify that there is a different way to be and a different world we want to craft. Paul offers this, that the ways to start is in right worship. To commit to God with our whole mind, our whole heart, our whole soul, all of our strength. To commit that to God, to divine things, and to ask God to instruct us and help us see more clearly where we're complicit and how we need to change, and to allow ourselves to be transformed, completely turned in a countervailing direction. It is a hard thing, but it is also a joy-inducing thing. And we have the promise that Moses had. If anyone asks, you can say you're in the company and being commissioned by the I Am, the great I Am. We do not walk that path alone. We do not live this out by ourselves. We do it with God's agency and company and wisdom and in the company of one another. So I invite us over these next 3-4 weeks for us to just really pray at home and say, God, how do I need to be transformed? Where in my life am I complicit? In what ways am I silent when I shouldn't be silent? And help me to have the courage, the faith, to trust you, to walk me forward. I think it could be an exciting time. And so we have a hymn that asks a question, or puts forward a summons, I guess. It's called The Summons, so I invite us to stand and sing Faith We Sing at the Little Black Book 2130.